Welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcasts. So in podcast 732, we're going to do a yoga podcast. Every now and then I zig and I zag and throw something in from left field, and it's about time to do that because we're getting pretty heavy in the podcast lately on the political commentary, and it's time to take a step back. But the other thing I like to do is put some substance in these podcasts, and so I'm going to talk about ego, narcissism, and yoga and meditation in podcast 732, the Bob Davis Yoga Podcast, Always a Student. Now, before we start, let's talk about purity, okay? And in specific, water purity. I don't know about you, but I don't drink the tap water in my town. For one thing, it doesn't taste very good. And then I got a piece in the mail a few weeks ago that basically detailed all of the chemicals and pollutants in the water and all the chemicals that are used to get rid of all the chemicals that are in the water. And the truth is that water can have toxins that are odorless, tasteless, and colorless. You just, even if it doesn't taste very good, it may have tons of toxins. And this is true in a lot of suburbs in big cities like the one where I live. And yes, I spend a lot of money on bottled water. I buy two or three cases at a time. I have to carry it from the store to the car and up the stairs at the house. And there's a solution to this. So Joe Berg from The Water Butler was telling me that he can make my tap water more pure and better tasting than bottled water and better for me than bottled water. And it's affordable. Now, what is this? It is something that you find at masterplumbermn.com. That's masterplumbermn.com. To make it easy, there is a banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com, which says Water Butler. This is their water purification system. They can set you up with a water purification system that will end your dependence on bottled water forever. Now, I'm going to give you a number, and you can call this number if you don't want to check out the website. You can just call 763-286-8328. That's 763-286-8328. If you do yoga a lot, you know that you drink a lot of water. And so you are probably like me, you drink a lot of bottled water, and you don't necessarily want to put tap water in your yoga, water thing, and then go do yoga. And, you're practicing a physical practice. So, of course, all of those impurities are getting imported into your body. So if you live in St. Louis Park, Rogers, Maple Grove, Edina, Plymouth, or Minnetonka, it is time to purify your water right from the source and also end your dependence on bottled water forever. With the Water Butler, they have 68 years of experience with plumbing, so they're not going to get messed up there. And they have 30 years of experience with water filtration systems. 763-286-8328, 763-286-8328, or click on the banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. Ask for Joe Berg or visit masterplumbermn.com, masterplumbermn.com. Again, end your dependence on bottled water today. I'm getting one put in at the broadcast bunker, and I will tell you all about my experience with it soon, so stay tuned. Yeah, I always do this as almost a disclaimer. I entitle the yoga podcast Always a Student because it reinforces humility for me, because I have great respect for the people I practice with and great respect for the teachers. And I always say always a student because I don't think I would be a good yoga teacher, because I tend to be a little insensitive from time to time. And they always tell me, oh, no, we're like that too. You'd be a great teacher. But I think it's because they want me to take the training. Anyway, that's my little disclaimer about this, because I want you to understand, because sometimes I can be pretty intense and I can say things like, they're written in stone. But for this particular type of podcast, it's really important to reinforce the humility that I have for the practice and for my teacher. So what brought this on? This morning, I was doing my news scan and looking at all the crazy stuff going on in the world, and I came across this article in Quartz, which is an online magazine. And I will post a link in the blog for the podcast at thebobdavispodcast.com. But this study, this news story, talked about a study that was done by the University of Southampton in England, and it will be published in the Journal of Psychological Science, that basically says people's egos get bigger after they practice meditation and or yoga. Now, it's based on psychologist William James, who theorizes that practicing any skill breeds a sense of self-enhancement, which I don't know if that's such a bad thing. I don't know if that's a negative, and I don't know that he meant it as a negative, but I guess what they're saying is that there's an inflated self-regard in psychological terms that comes from being able to practice a skill. So let's say you're a pilot. Maybe you'll get all up in it and feel good about yourself because you have this incredible skill of being able to pilot an airliner or something. I don't know. Now, I'm going to read from this because it's complicated. The University of Southampton researchers decided to test James's theory, so they did two things, and I'm not going to go through the second part of it, but they found 93 people that practice yoga every day and something like 140 people who meditate, do a Buddhist meditation every day, and they asked them, they tracked them, and they asked them over a period of 15 weeks several measures that are used to evaluate the sense of well-being of the subject. First, they assessed the participants' level of self-enhancement by asking how they compared to the average yoga student in their class. And I know a lot of people that do yoga are going, oh, no, wait a minute. We tell people not to do that. Right, I know, and I get that. Comparisons to the average, and this is why they asked the question, is a standard way of measuring self-enhancement. Second, they had participants complete an inventory that assesses narcissistic tendencies, which asked participants to rate how deeply phrases like, I will be well known for the good deeds I will have done, applied to them. Now, there's a whole list of these. We don't need to get into that. Finally, they administered a self-esteem scale, asking participants whether statements like, at the moment I have self-esteem, applied to them and how much they applied to them. Evaluated in the hour after their yoga class, the students showed significantly higher self-enhancement than when they hadn't done yoga in the previous 24 hours. There was also a component of this study, as I said, which included Buddhist meditation. I'm not going to get into that because they reached the same conclusion with meditation, because what they're saying is these practices may not do what proponents typically say that they do. So what do proponents typically say that yoga and meditation do? And I'm separating the two. I do believe that yoga is a meditation, and the whole purpose of yoga is to learn to breathe so that you can meditate. I don't meditate other than in class. So, I mean, when I'm doing the series, I'm meditating basically. But anyway, ego quieting is a central element of yoga philosophy and Buddhism alike. That element and its presumed implications, I'm still reading from the study, require serious rethinking, says the study's author. And then they said, moreover, ego quieting is often called upon to explain mind-body practices as well as well-being benefits. In contrast, we observed that mind-body practices boost self-enhancement, and this boost in turn elevates well-being. Now, I'm not so sure any of that is bad, but here's my experience with yoga and with this. One of the things that happens in yoga right away is, and you'll notice this or you will have noticed this, that there is a thing called the community. This is people who are really into yoga and do yoga every day and or come to the yoga, you know, studios and are there and they're seen every other day or every day, and we're all kind of a community. The yoga community in Minneapolis and St. Paul is pretty deep because they've been practicing yoga here for a long time. So there's people who are really serious about yoga. They don't come usually to the place where I practice because the place where I practice is more of a commercial kind of place. But there's meditation practices. There is singing practices. There are chanting practices. There are meditation practices that are more like self-realization fellowship stuff from Yogananda, which was more meditation than it is actually doing postures. So when you go to, you know, one of these gym-like yoga places, and I do, and I like it because it's focused on physicality, but it's also focused on teaching you yoga, but you have an option to do other things besides the same thing over and over and over again. So there's people that come because it's a cross-training sort of fitness experience, as well as an opportunity to learn about yourself and learn about yoga because you're teaching yourself. Nobody's telling you that yoga is your salvation. Nobody's telling you that this is what you have to do. You do you. That's one of the phrases we hear all the time. But there are people in the community who are very much strong, have strong judgments about things. Let's just put it that way. And this is one of the reasons that yoga has been such a great comedic trigger in movies and TV shows and books, from which comes support for all kinds of causes and ideas, usually associated with a certain point of view. Sometimes after class, in some classes, and I don't think they do this on purpose, but you will hear teachers refer to the earth as a mother. They will talk about the environment. They will talk about recycling or something like that. Not all of them do it. And I think most of the ones who do it because they feel they're in a community and it's okay. You know, and I just kind of chuckle when they do it sometimes. But the best closing of all at the end of the class is the idea that all beings should be happy and free. And I don't know anyone that can't get behind that. So I'm all for that. One of the things you hear a lot these days is I'm spiritual. Now, this is usually in response to somebody trying to push a certain religious practice or point of view on somebody who doesn't belong to said specific practice. And we don't want to seem like heathens, so we might say, well, I'm spiritual. Or we want to put ourselves a step up, so we'll say, I'm spiritual. By the way, I never say I'm spiritual, because I don't think that I am. And yet, here I am doing a yoga podcast. Here I am talking about how I feel about after yoga. Here I am talking about feeling, you know, trends and having a sense of sort of a third eye sort of sense of how things are these days, things like that. No, I don't say that I'm spiritual. I do so much yoga, according to the study. I'm not spiritual. I'm a huge jerk, which could, in fact, be true. The definition of spiritual, by the way, is relating to or affecting the human spirit or soul as opposed to material things. And again, I don't know if I'm spiritual or not. We all come to the mat for different reasons, and most of the time, they aren't spiritual. So when we first start doing yoga, we come from the gym. We come because we want to lose weight. We come because we're stressed out. We come because we want to look good for some event. We come with a girlfriend or a boyfriend or a wife or a husband. The studio is offering free classes and we have a coupon, so we think, why not? I'm going to get some free yoga. I remember two guys from my Bikram class when I first started doing yoga who came every week because it helped their golf game. And really, that was all they care about. They were super excited because they would do Bikram and then go golf and beat the daylights out of their neighbors. So that's why they came. I do, you know, here's another one. I do too much CrossFit and I need to stretch, or I run too much, or I'm going to run a marathon and I got to stretch because I've been training for that. So there's all kinds of reasons people come. I'm stressed out and I'm going to lose weight. One of the things I first heard from a teacher when I first started going to yoga, and why did I start going to yoga? I was really angry. I was filled with bile from a lifetime in the radio business and from being too involved and too focused on national events and too focused on the negative things. And I had done some yoga in Chicago, and when I moved to Minneapolis, I was riding past a yoga studio, a Bikram studio on the bike trail, and I went in and signed up and had never done Bikram, and I was hooked from the get-go because of the difference in the way that I felt, the relaxation that I experienced. And believe me, I couldn't do any of that stuff. So that's the place where I heard from a teacher, the first thing I heard from a teacher, which, by the way, was not something that they necessarily supported at Bikram. This is really interesting because this guy would do these classes. He was a really interesting guy. You know, interesting story on his part. There were things that happened in his life that took him down a path that you would have said, well, he was an ass. But he was very knowledgeable about yoga and studied things and would do these little seminars. And then they told him to stop doing them. But basically, one of them was that he told us that all yoga does is amplify what is inside you. So if you're an ass, you're just going to be a bigger ass. And I didn't even know what that meant when I heard it. I mean, yeah, you hear it and you think, I know what that means. I got that. But I really didn't fully internalize that until years and years later when I came to understand very well what that meant, that it amplifies what is inside you. And remember, what I said, that there was a great deal of bile and anger inside me from personal stuff, from radio stuff, because if you're in radio, if you're in the entertainment business, the gentlest soul, will be eaten and spit out unless they develop calluses and get tough, and it happens real fast. So I came from a world that was very much about swagger and toughness and all those things, and, you know, I was also very angry. And so it took a long time to get that out of me, you know, a long time, 15, 20 years of doing this every day. So that's something. Then there's all this, you know, thing about comparing yourself to others and quote-unquote making judgments. And yes, we are told constantly, do not look at the person next to you. And I'm going to talk about that in a second because you're not supposed to be doing that. But I do, you know, I have friends who are politically active and politically conservative, and they don't understand how I can do yoga every day with and put up with the quote-unquote granolas at yoga. These are my people, these granolas. I love these people. Because why? Because I can be with people that, because I don't give a damn what their politics are. And honestly, I doubt that they give a damn about my politics. But I don't share what my politics are at these places. I think it is sad that people would miss out on a great experience like this because they had a view that certain people don't agree with them and their way of life and their attitude. One of my good friends said, you know, I want a girlfriend who's conservative. And I said, why? I just want a great girlfriend or whatever, a wife, a mate. I don't care. You know, and he's like, I just don't want to argue with, I don't want to have to deal with, you know, political arguments. And yet, some of my best friends have completely different political viewpoints than I do, and it doesn't bother me at all. It's just, I think that's the sad part because you miss out on some key stuff. And yes, you do have a great sense of well-being after yoga, and I think in the West, we are more likely to hang on to that idea after we practice than people in India or, you know, I don't know, wherever they practice yoga in the East. And I'll talk about that in a second here. So much in the West is ego-driven. Our persona is a product, for God's sake, on social media. Who we are supposed to be is as important as who we really are in the crazy world that we live in. It's a different experience in the East than it is in the West in terms of technology and in terms of our centering of ego. An egotist here might not be an egotist there and vice versa. So, and I'll talk about that a little bit more in a second. Now, one of the things that I talk a lot about when I talk about yoga is making sure that you're hydrated. And hydration is really, really important. So if you drink 16 ounces of water before a yoga class, you're not going to be fully hydrated till about half an hour in. Now, if you're practicing yoga in 105 degrees and 60% or 40% humidity, you know how these rooms, especially in the summer, can get really hot, like really hot. I went to a sculpt class tonight, and there was a hot fusion class right before that class, and there was a guy actually sitting on his knees in the locker room. And there, you know, you could tell that the heat had just overwhelmed them because those classes eat no matter what the teacher does, because if they open the vents, more humidity comes in. So if the temperature is 104, 105, 106, 107, and the humidity spikes, then hydration is really, really important. And a lot of times people just are not hydrated enough, or they drink, products that have sugar as a delivery system for electrolytes. So I use a product called Hydrus, H-Y-D-R-U-S. You can find out more about it at hydrusperformance.com. Hydrus gets these electrolytes into your muscles using advanced new nanosome technology. It is just simply the material that your cells are made of, and it gets the electrolytes into your muscles immediately. So when you drink 16 ounces of that stuff before class, you are fully hydrated, up and running. And I did one of the hardest sculpt class tonight that I've done in a long time, and I just cranked all the way through it. So you drink one bottle before, you drink one bottle in the middle of, and one bottle at the end, and you're going to maintain that hydration. So go to hydrusperformance.com, H-Y-D-R-U-S, hydrusperformance.com. I get the orange, and I get it in bottles because that's a special formula. Some people like the lemon lime, and you dilute that with 16 ounces of water, and you're good to go. And I'll talk more about in the future how I use Hydrus, but I'm telling you, it has transformed my yoga practice from day one, and I've been using it now for about 4 or 5 years. So I love Hydrus. HydrusPerformance.com, HYDRUS, HydrusPerformance.com. So yeah, anybody who knows anything about yoga and meditation practices knows they have different applications and results in the West than in the East, where they originated. None other than Carl Jung wrote about this in, I think, Man and Western Religion, and talked about the Trinity, and talked about, you know, ancient symbols and what they meant, talked about Celtic symbols, talked about the way yoga and meditation is practiced in the East and how it has worked its way into the West, and cautioned the Western mind of applying principles of yoga and religious ideas of yoga in the West without really thinking it through. So yoga in the West is a completely different experience than it is in the East. Now, I haven't practiced yoga in India, so I couldn't tell you, but I can tell you from people I know that have gone there to learn that they have a completely different, often a spiritual experience, by the way, of yoga that they do not have here. I've told you that, you know, where I go is like more of a gym. So from yoga with weights or sculpt classes, as narcissistic as it gets, but also really fun, by the way, to the full Bikram series and full on meditation and singing and chanting in the yoga community and, you know, quiet reflection and self-realization and so forth and so on. And that is true in almost any place where yoga communities exist and different practices of yoga. And by the way, we're not supposed to compare ourselves with other people. We hear this all the time in class, and yet because we're Westerners, we do. Why do they say that? Because everybody's body is different, and there are things your body will do that the person next to you won't be able to do, and vice versa. I remember a very beautiful 29, 30-year-old woman who I remember had the longest limbs in I've ever seen in my life. She probably weighed 100 pounds soaking wet, and she was 5'7 or 5'8 or 5'9, maybe even taller than that. And her arms and legs were just super long. So when she did a forward bend, she would literally bend over like a Japanese ham sandwich. That's a Bikram reference. But she would bend over completely and flatten her belly against her legs. And then her arms could go all the way back to, like, you know, anywhere. And I just remember being, because my forward bend is not like that. Let's just put it that way. So if you're 230 pounds, 6'5", or 6 foot guy who has big biceps and big thighs from wrestling or from football or something, you're not going to be able to do Eagle. We have often professional football players that come in and do yoga, and they can't do yoga. I mean, they can't do Eagle because you have to, you know, wrap your legs around your one leg goes behind, over and behind, and then you hook your toes on the other side of your ankle, and then you bend your knees. Well, you know, their thighs are bigger than my entire trunk, one thigh. So they can't do that. But that doesn't mean that they're not strong, and it doesn't mean that they aren't good at something, and it doesn't mean that they don't get the benefits of the pose. They just have to modify. So the teachers are constantly telling us, don't look at the other guy. Now, we do because it's the West, and that's just the way it is. We just have to be reminded constantly that everybody's body is different, but that doesn't mean anything. There should not be a value judgment. Now, those judgments that you have go a lot further because of brain noise, and I'm going to talk about that in a second. First of all, we're Westerners. We are going to compare ourselves, and we're going to make judgments about the people next to us and ourselves, and they are going to do the same. Usually, they're not correct. Usually, if you're doing yoga next to somebody and you're irritated by something that they do, if you talk to them after class, you realize they're just a really great person and they're there to do their yoga, and they're probably realizing the same thing with you, and you don't know what judgments they came up about you, and you wouldn't want to. The point is that it is a journey, and with daily practice, very slowly, unfortunately too slowly, we begin to see ourselves, and usually what we see is not something that we're necessarily proud of, and that is why we worship you know, another, we worship a being greater than ourselves, or we try to develop or get better, you know, in our lives or improve ourselves, because there's things that no one, we're all like, this is a human condition. There are things that we're not proud of. This is also true, I am sure, in India, just as much as it's true in Chicago or Minneapolis and St. Paul. Now, it's especially true with Bikram, because you're standing shoulder to shoulder in front of a mirror, and the nature of Bikram used to be, I don't know if it still is, but the most experienced people go in the front row so that they can demonstrate what the poses are supposed to look like, and the least experienced are in the back row, and this only encourages the you know, the echeloning, for lack of a better term, or a hierarchy, and, oh, look, he's been practicing a long time and he can barely do this, or he's got a great bow, or he can do half moon and bend all the way over, and that's amazing. And, you know, it encourages judgment, which, you know, I don't know what they do in Bikram anymore. I haven't done the Bikram series at a Bikram studio in a while, so who knows. But you're doing a static series, which means you're doing the same series over and over and over again, and you get frustrated when you can't do stuff, and you get mad. And then you start judging people. Well, you know, I did it better than him and stuff like that. That is brain noise. You know, that's all that is, and it's not going to go away. So you just have to learn to deal with it, and you have to learn not to do that. But even with that series, with the Bikram series, there's a process that begins. And, you know, if you're listening to this and you've been doing yoga for any length of time, you know exactly what I'm talking about, because I'm demonstrating that process as I speak with my own stupidity and crazy, you know, tendencies. The process takes years. It took me 10 years to see what happens when you combine years of the manifesting capability of an intense daily yoga practice. Now, what does that mean? Well, if you've done yoga for a long time, you know what I'm talking about. It's one of the processes, it's one of the promises that after a while it's easier to manifest things that you want, and you end up having to tune that that transmitter inside you, because you have to be careful of what you think about and what you say. And of course, you know, I'm doing talk radio and I'm doing yoga every day. And the whole thing about talk radio is ginning people up and getting people angry and screaming and yelling and pounding. And I learned a very tough lesson about what happens when you combine anger with words. And it wasn't it wasn't very much fun. I could have said what I said that particular day with different words, and no one would have said anything about it. But I had to be an ass. I had to communicate something very strongly, and to a degree, it had to do with the intensity of yoga and the ability to manifest. And when you put something out at that kind of intensity, things come back at you at a much greater intensity. So the whole thing is really, what is a healthy ego, and what does a healthy sense of self, you know, look like, and when does a healthy ego become a full-blown narcissist or sociopath? Now, there are some people that think sociopathic stuff and psychotic stuff, you know, psychopathic stuff is really something that we don't really have any control over. I don't know enough about psychology to know whether that's true. But according to the Learning Mind, which is a website I found in the research for this podcast, and I'll post a link at the bobdavispodcast.com, here are some things that show egotistic or egoist behavior. When you have to win an argument at all, by the way, this all describes talk radio hosts. When you have to win an argument at all costs, who does that sound like? When you care to, and by the way, also people in politics, and it doesn't matter what their political persuasion is, this describes politicians to a T. When you care too much about what other people think about you. When you relive the past all the time. So your greatest hits, your greatest achievements. In high school, I was amazing. I made touchdowns every week, and they talk about it again and again. In 1983, I worked at this place, and it was amazing. You know, when you become too possessive of your stuff and your ideas and your things, they don't, you know, people who are egotists or egoists do not like people touching their things. When you feel you are separated from the rest of the world because you're special or different or all of those things. Now, those are all things which can be healthy, but they can also be unhealthy. They're all signs of being egocentric. Then we get to narcissists. So these days, by the way, narcissist and narcissistic behavior is all the rage because of its impact on relationships. There are a million YouTube videos from people who claim to be experts, Dr., you know, Susan you know, Bjork or something, who has a PhD in, I don't know, you know, biochemistry or something, is an expert on narcissism. Every person that's had a bad boyfriend or bad girlfriend will tell you what a narcissist is. But narcissists add to all these things that I told you about. They have a sense of grandeur and grandiosity, which inflates their minor accomplishments. They have an excessive need to be praised. They are show-offs. They take advantage of others, hence the bad boyfriend or bad girlfriend thing. Egoists, and I suppose narcissists, have a tendency to prejudge people, and it is said that they are often wrong. And that one really hits home with me. But then again, sometimes I'm right. They often live with an imaginary audience where they fantasize about how people will judge them positively. Narcissists fantasize about being in positions of power and will often use tricks to manipulate people. And that's all over YouTube too. Now, I think some of these are naturally occurring tendencies in human beings. It's when they become chronic that it becomes narcissist or egoist or egocentric. Does yoga and meditation amplify that kind of behavior? Well, I don't know if I would describe or prescribe yoga as an antidote for narcissism, because keeping in mind what I said earlier, that yoga amplifies what is inside. But, in other words, if you have to have therapy, then you have to have therapy. If you need to look at yourself through analysis, then you should do that. I don't think yoga is going to help you with that, because it's going to amplify. But I think the practice is humbling enough that eventually you let go of some of those more negative egoist tendencies if you can get through it for a few years, even if you just do an hour a day of yoga. Once you settle down and appreciate everybody for who they are and realize it is literally like peeling away an onion that you never get to the end of. There is always going to be somebody who is a better practitioner, supposedly. There's always going to be a woman with, you know, really long limbs who can do things that you will never be able to do that will humble you. And at some point, you have to let go of those things and realize that a lot of that is just you talking to yourself. So then there's this learning process that takes place that I think is actually really positive. And actually, it's an antidote for this egoist or narcissist behavior. A few weeks ago on another podcast, I talk about how the mind tries to keep you in your comfort zone. I don't know if you remember that one. And it will use anything at its disposal to stop you from anything that brings discomfort. I'm hot. I can't breathe. I'm sweating too much. And my example was, I was in a sculpt, and I am taking black seed oil, which actually depresses your blood sugar. I had not eaten, and I was really struggling, and I just kept going, and all of a sudden I started freaking out about stuff, you know, in my life. This is all internal while I'm doing mountain climbers or something, and at people are screaming and the music's playing loud and everything else, and I'm sweating. And at that moment, I was like, this is my mind trying to get me to stop. And once I broke through that, I ended the class. It was great. And since then, it has transformed my yoga practice. So that is something I learned late in life, that you cannot listen. Now, your mind does that to you all the time. My mind does that to me all the time. That's this negative self-talk that we hear about all the time. And you have to turn it off. Somebody said to me today, I had a business meeting. We were talking about business. And she said, you know, if you cannot endure pain, you cannot be successful. And she told me an incredible story about, you know, her story and how she didn't have heat in her car, and she was going around town without heat in her car, and she couldn't feed her kids, and it was an incredibly painful time. And now she has a very successful business. And I thought that was a great message, because the idea is, it's not that you want pain. It's that when you're an entrepreneur and you're in business for yourself, you know, you have to go through these changes. You have to be able to endure pain. Well, I mean, to a certain degree, being bent over and not being able to breathe is an example of that kind of challenge. So this is why I always say that the real work is done on the mat, because this is where these are the things that you have to address and you have to change. There's lots of other defense mechanisms we use because we think we're not good enough, or we think we're afraid, or we want this, or we want that. And when we're physically challenged, we start saying that we can't do it. You can't do it. You can't do it. You can't do it. And if you listen to that, then what do? Well, you stop and leave the room. You know, now I've had to leave the room, don't get me wrong, because, you know, I almost passed out sometimes, but, The idea is that you can go, you are stronger than you think you are, you have more stamina than you think you have, and you can push yourself a lot further than you know. And this is true in life as well as in yoga. And we unconsciously stop ourselves for various reasons. But I have to say that yoga has taught me that I can hurt others and not even intend to be aware of my own strength as well as my own weaknesses. And I guess it has amplified the jerk in me from time to time, but I've also learned to be more gentle and to appreciate others more than I used to, and to care about other people and to really take joy in other people who are not like me. I don't have to have, I don't have to flock with the same birds of the same feather. And I don't think it's an example of inflating my ego so much. I think it's actually just the opposite, but it doesn't happen overnight. You have to go through the pain of finding out that you're a jerk sometimes first before you can come out the other end. And by the way, you know, I'm certainly no saint, and I'm certainly not clean as a driven snow, and I am certainly not at the end of that journey. And yoga is a journey. And now, I don't know much about meditation. I've certainly read meditation books. I have read Yogananda's book. I'm certainly aware of the history of yoga and the promises of yoga and all those things and some of or many of the concepts. I've certainly experienced some of the concepts of yoga, you know, in terms of manifestation and things of that nature and some of the weird stuff you go through in your head. But I can tell you that I am on a journey, and I love being on the journey, and I don't care if the journey ends. And there are days when I think that all I want to do is more yoga, because that's all that matters. And I do believe that on the mat is where the work is done. So honestly, I don't care if it promotes egoistic behavior. I don't think it does after a time, after you practice for a while. And I do think in the West, we are so beaten down that egotistical behavior isn't such a bad thing as long as it doesn't go into full-blown narcissism. Now, to close, I would just say, you know, I've always been on a mission personally, and I've never cared too much about money. I've never really even cared too much about recognition. I do what I do because I want to express myself. And the only reason I care about money now is I'm building a business, and I now know the value of money. I didn't know the value of it before, but still, what's important to me is learning and practicing and being alive and being grateful for the things that are great in my life, and trying to solve the problems that have to be solved and doing what I do. And I am learning through yoga, truthfully, that sometimes we are our own worst enemies, and it's really hard to figure out how. It's like the unseen hand that people talk about, but it's really hard to figure out how that happens. And it's easy to fall back into certain kinds of behavior. It's easy to sabotage yourself. All I know is this. If I hadn't started doing yoga more than 20 years ago, I can tell you this, I would not be as happy and free as I am today. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast, yoga podcast, always a student. Listen for my podcast on Stitcher.com, iTunes, TuneIn, BlogTalkRadio.com, Google Play. Subscribe to the Bob Davis Podcast RSS feed right off the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. Subscribe at iTunes. Subscribe at Stitcher if you have an Android device, or tuned in, Google Play, all these places. We're also available at Spreaker because Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker merged and had a baby. There's all kinds of places where you can get the Bob Davis Podcast. And of course, it's always good right off the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. I do appreciate the likes and the shares and favoriting and so forth on social media, such as it is, Facebook, Twitter. I love Instagram. I never put anything political up on Instagram. And I appreciate your donations for thebobdavispodcast.com mobile unit. More about that in future podcasts at thebobdavispodcast.com. Rising like the smoke, you linger on me. You got me so high, I can finally breathe. Your walking poetry, it's what you do to me, it's what you do. Tell me, touch me with no hands, hold me with your eyes.